The Anton Savage Show with Kearies.ie on News Talk.
The inaugural Women's Prize for Nonfiction has been awarded to the best-selling writer, global activist and filmmaker Naomi Klein for her book Doppelganger, A Trip into the Mirror World. And it's sort of MacGuffin at the outset is her own doppelganger, Naomi Wolf, who she is often mistaken for. But it leads from there into a huge analysis of online politics, of fake news, of social media and the dangers of social media. And unusually, it comes up with suggestions as to answers to many of the problems that are delineated within the book. Naomi, good morning.
Good morning.
I've heard you talk about people's desire online to effectively to move into their own castles in the air, to get away from big issues. So to get away from climate change, to get away from things like COVID, where it is overwhelming or it is worrying to them. The bit that I'm struggling with is, why do people do it by choice in small ways? So if you look at a movement like MAGA, if you look at things like QAnon, the desire to move into a castle in the air for no immediate avoidance of anything significant.
There's always reasons to avoid. I don't know about you. I mean, I'm trying to avoid things all the time. I think that MAGA and Trump, Trump is a creature of television. This is the thing you have to understand and remember about Trump, that he is... You know, he comes from the world of reality TV. He comes from the impulse that we all have, or many of us have, to disappear into a fantasy. What else do we do? And we kind of binge watch these shows. And you know, his show in particular was, as many reality shows are, really about aspirational wealth, a fantasy life that we might want for ourselves. That's what he sells. So I think he was always particularly well positioned to merge the political impulse to disappear into fantasy, the castles in the air, as you're describing, because you know that's his métier as a reality show star, who is promising a taste of this gilded life that he markets.
And is that what drives the desire? Because you see a lot of people who would be part of that cult, who will vote and act in ways that are often inimical to their own best interests, but they do it because they have moved into this parallel mirror world. Is that what it is? It's aspiration that if we believe in him, we get to touch the hem of the cloth or the hem of the dress?
I think it's a combination of factors. You know, I say in the book that conspiracy culture often gets the facts wrong, but the feelings right. And that matters, because what Trump is tapping into is a feeling that, you know, the regular guy, if you will, the little guy, is being screwed, that this system is rigged, that there are these powerful forces who are scheming to enrich themselves and mess with you and make sure that you can't afford your groceries or to pay the bills. And the problem is they're not entirely wrong, right? So Trump's thing is, I'll be your billionaire, and together we'll take on the swamp, the system, the deep state. And so when you have a figure like Joe Biden, who is really the embodiment of sort of a Washington insider, right? He can't really market himself, even though he tries to market himself as sort of the train riding Joe lunchbox. People are not buying that anymore from Joe Biden. He is too much. He's been in politics for way too long to really sell that. So it's that outsider ethos that Trump is tapping into, even though it seems odd. But it's always worth remembering that his campaign manager, Steve Bannon, really didn't want him running against Bernie Sanders because of somebody like Bernie Sanders, because he actually has a political platform that is designed to actually get people higher wages and take on the billionaire tech companies and pharmaceutical companies with regulation. He sort of exposes Trump as the $3 bill that he is, right? But when he's running against Biden, I think that sort of frisson of maybe we'll just have our own billionaire on our side is more appealing in all of this fantasy. But so it's really a dynamic with the centrists that we have to understand.
Even that, though, you could see how back in the day when you had a CBS News with Heft in the evening giving analysis of different policy platforms, even facing Bernie Sanders, presumably now people have such a capacity to find the information that sets with their, that fits with their own preconceived notions and algorithms feeding them exactly that, that even faced with a more compelling platform, people won't find it, or people will actively resist the information that runs counter to their preconceived notions.
Well, some always will, but the question is, you know, how large a movement would it be? And it really is more than half of the population on a bad day sometimes in the United States. So, you know, it's not that nobody would, but would it be the dominant form of politics if the mainstream political parties were had real solutions? Because I think there are real problems that need solving. And right now, I mean, speaking to you from London, where a lot of people who I talk to are, you know, happy Tory rule is going to end, but don't have much hope that Labour is going to fix much, because they're coming in with a platform of austerity as usual for the most part. And sometimes Keir Starmer sounds a little bit like Margaret Thatcher when he's talking about how the government needs to balance the books like a household and so on. But the NHS really needs serious funding. So in a few years' time, how are people going to be feeling? You know, and might they be primed for a candidate who's going to push them further to the right? You know, that's my fear in a moment like this.
So what then, and this goes to the thing I was saying at the start, that your book is unusual in that it does offer possible solutions or approaches to bring us back out of the mirror world. What then can put all of this back into the bottle?
Yeah. Well, as you can hear, I mean, I suppose it's not, I don't have a magic formula. You know, I really do think we need that. These are policy questions for the most part. I mean, I don't want to minimize the role of social media. And I do think that it is a problem that misinformation can spread as rapidly as it does. I think part of that is we need to invest in our media ecosystem more. We need to, I think the ways in which tech companies have been allowed to poach advertising from newspapers is a huge problem. I also think, you know, the destruction of local news is a huge piece of this. But ultimately, I think we need policies that are addressing the underlying injustices of our economy, that are going to fund our basic services and meet the real crises that we face. And so long as we don't have policies that are going to do that, whether it's climate change, whether it's the war in Gaza, then I think that the flight into fantasy will seem more appealing, because there's a lot to look away from. You know, you said people don't really have anything immediate to distract themselves from when we started talking, but there's so many things to distract ourselves from. You know, just read the paper. There's no end of reasons why we might want to disappear into fantasy. But these are not problems that we can solve as individuals. These are serious policy issues. And unfortunately, our mainstream parties in most of our countries are not solving them.
Is time running out? Because there is this notion of the Overton window, that you can only legislate for that which is within the bounds of reason and possibility for your electorate. A lot of the social media giants have made the idea of legislating or regulating them and what is said on their platforms politically anathema, I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think people generally aren't exposed to possible policy responses. I mean, when they're not hearing about it in election campaigns. And I think that they would love for us to believe the cat's out of the bag and there's nothing that we can do. I think there's always something that we can do. So yeah, I'm not sure that I buy that. No.
So what then are the type of regulatory or policy controls that we should have?
Well, I think there's sort of some small things, where something like what Meta did, where it became much harder to follow links to credible news organizations. You know, that should have been an absolute non-starter, and they were allowed to do that in a lot of markets, but not every market, which showed that it would be possible to stop. But you have to be willing to play hardball and actually cut them off from markets. And you know, because these are transnational companies, there does need to be coordination between governments so that it happens. So they stand to lose a few big markets at once. I think that might get their attention, because they can usually write off one market if it's only one. Like maybe they could just threaten to leave Canada, I suppose, if we said, you know, you have to include links to news sites. But like I said, I mean, I think we need to fund our public broadcasters. I think we need to invest in local media, understanding that, you know, this is, you know, even something like the prevalence of natural disasters. You know, where I live, we have a huge number of wildfires now because of the climate crisis and bad forest management. And it's becoming increasingly difficult to just get basic information about evacuations, about how to stay safe. So it's really quite urgent that we know how to communicate with each other reliably, especially when we're facing these sort of increasingly frequent shocks. So that's something that our governments need to prioritize. And if there aren't market solutions, then we need non-market solutions.
Can I ask you, Norman, since you're the huge success that was No Logo, the theme throughout your books has been an analysis and criticism of capitalism and the capitalist system and how it is failing people. 20 odd years on, are you pessimistic or do you think things are improving?
You know, I don't describe myself as an optimist, but I have seen some very big shifts in my time. I think the biggest shift is one of understanding and consciousness. You know, when No Logo came out a quarter of a century now, it was sort of seen as shocking to have a criticism of capitalism. I mean, it was the go-go 90s. And even like saying the word capitalism was just like, you could say corporations, but to say capitalism, it was frightening. I teach university students, I spend a lot of time talking to young people in their 20s. And I do derive a lot of hope from the fact that they have a much deeper sense that these are systemic failures. They want to go deeper. They want to connect the dots between militarism, the climate crisis, racism, colonialism. They aren't interested in the kind of band-aids that my generation was looking for. But I wouldn't say that I'm sanguine. I mean, I think we absolutely have our work cut out for us, but I am heartened that there does seem to be a real generational shift.
Well, the latest book, Doppelganger, A Trip into the Mirror World, has won the inaugural Women's Prize for Nonfiction. The author, Naomi Klein. Naomi, great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.